You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report. And our guest on this hour of the Made of Clay Report is John Ziegler. So John, it's good to have you here.
Hey, I'm glad to be here, Eric. Thanks for inviting me.
So, John, the way we start the show is with a very huge question.
Okay.
Who are you? And that's just a way to kind of, what do we need to know about you, kind of to get a general picture of the mosaic of your life, the big pieces?
Well, it's funny, you know.
Or the big qualities, yeah.
You sent me some preparation materials before I came in, and I saw the first question, and that's as far as I got.
Uh-huh. I said, that's fine.
Boy.
And wing it.
It's going to be like this. Huh? So, I don't know. That's tough. I mean, I guess some of the ways other people have described me when they're trying to be nice to me is that I'm a very loyal person.
Uh-huh.
That I'm dependable. That I'm funny. You know, these are like sort of individual traits, but
right.
What I guess that means is that, I'm someone who really cares about my friends, mm-hmm. and family, mm-hmm. and wants to be the kind of person who someone looks to when they need help with something,
right?
And someone who can provide that help, someone who's capable of answering a question or lending a hand to move something around, or someone who just needs someone to talk to, or mm-hmm. yeah, I think that's a big part of who I would like to be, at least.
Right.
I hope that I am that way.
Yeah. And I know on part of your life is working with your hands.
Yep.
But you also, from the way you've described it, your hands and your heart and your mind are real well all tied together in terms of loyalty and being practical and useful and caring. And just the way you described it.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to describe it. And that's, I think, mostly when faced with a question like that, who are you, what are you,
right.
It's kind of an aspirational answer, because I have a way that I want to be,
uh-huh.
and I hope I'm that way, but
right.
it's sort of an ongoing process, you know.
Right, yes, and that is, and people take that question a lot of different ways, but as a reflection of your aspiration means you also don't necessarily control. You know, you don't necessarily know exactly your impact on other people, but
right.
you know your intentions.
Right.
And that's beautiful.
Yeah.
So what should we start with musically today?
Okay. Let's see.
What should we play first?
And do you want to
say something about it?
Why don't we start with this song by Bobby Charles, Street People?
Mm-hmm.
Bobby Charles is a New Orleans musician. He died a few years ago. He's most famous for writing See You Later, Alligator,
uh-huh,
which
uh-huh.
became a big Fats Domino hit.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
So he was he had his own career in the sort of golden age of New Orleans R&B. Wasn't quite as successful with the recording, but he was a good producer and a songwriter. And then he put out a really great album in the early 70s. And the band played on the record, and Alan Toussaint produced some of the songs. This song is from that record.
Okay.
And he's just a favorite of mine.
And
yeah.
do you want to talk about your connection to New Orleans, or just?
Well, I grew up outside the city, St. Tammany Parish. Mm-hmm. If anybody's listening from
from the
GNO area, So I haven't lived there since I left after high school, since mm-hmm. I graduated high school. But a lot of my family's still down there. And a lot of friends, and so I still feel a very strong connection to it. And, it's got a very well-documented culture, the music especially.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So that's one way I can easily
and you carry
connect
it
to
with
it.
You.
You know?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah,
yeah.
So here we go.
The street people, the street people who's drifting from town to town. I got a job in a nursery, but they just didn't like what I grow. They called a man and he ran me off and said, now don't come back no more. I'm hanging out with the street people. They got it down. Hanging out with the street people, drifting from town to town. Who's gonna work, make the economy grow if we all hang out in the streets? Well, I don't know, and I don't care, just as long as it ain't me. Hanging out with the street people, they got it down. Street people drifting from town to town. Wouldn't trade places with no one I know. I'm happy where I'm at. Some people would rather work. We need people like that.
You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and our guest on this hour is John Siegler. So, John, when you are looking back on your life and the kind of the things that you've learned and that you value now, what were some of the experiences or some of the ways of living that you got to experience that have helped you to make the kinds of choices you value now, live the life you want to live now?
You know, I can think of one summer I took where I did a cross country bicycle trip with a friend of mine and I, and it was, you know, I suppose technically it wasn't fully cross country, but we rode from sort of central Arizona to the Chesapeake Bay.
Wow.
Into Jamestown, Virginia.
Yep.
over about 2.5 months or so, I think it was, right after I finished college. And, I feel like there were a lot of things that were solidified for me on that trip, sort of about things that I like and think ways that I wanted to be.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
One of those is just how much I love being outside. And I actually followed up that trip with a job in New York City working at a magazine. So I was in a cubicle in an office. And,
and you did, so you didn't really apply the lesson that you had learned.
Well, you know, sometimes it's hard to really know how to apply the lessons.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I said, wow, I felt so great just being outside every day.
Mm-hmm.
And this was an experience I'd had before, but it sort of reinforced it.
Mm-hmm.
And here I am working inside, you know, sending emails and making phone calls and ultimately doing something which I still love, which is writing.
Mm-hmm.
But the spending every day inside, sitting down, I thought, you know, like maybe this is just not for, this aspect of it is not for me.
Right.
You know, and I know that's a big part of working right. in publishing or whatever, but I just sort of like, I said, not for me.
Right. When you were riding cross country,
yeah.
How did you, you went with just with one friend?
I started with a friend of mine in Arizona. Uh-huh. And then once we got into Kansas, there are actually some well prescribed bicycle routes throughout the country.
Yeah.
And we started running into a lot of people because the middle of summer, there's actually a lot of people who do this cross country route.
Uh-huh.
So we picked up the route in Colorado and Kansas. We kind of came from like an offshoot of it.
What did you go, Route 36 or what was
you mean the road?
Yeah.
I don't remember. Yeah. I mean, there were so many roads.
Yeah, you know. That's a main east that cuts across Missouri into
Illinois. We went through southern Missouri.
Yeah. Oh, so yeah, you would have gone through a different route. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
Missouri was one of the toughest states to ride through. Yeah.
Because of the quality of the roads or the hilliness of South Missouri hills?
We were riding on really old roads.
Yep.
So very, very steep.
Yep.
Like short bursts of very steep sections and then sort of, you know, blood curdling downhills. And we were going through a lot of this river country.
Yep.
So there were a lot of tubing companies.
Right.
So there's big school buses full of, you know, drunken people on, you know, Saturday afternoons flying down these roads around you. And, but I, you know, the people in Missouri were great.
Yeah.
We saw some interesting things and met some interesting folks. But overall, I mean, the highlight of the trip was just talking to people and how surprised I was. I was surprised how open and easygoing people were. I was worried that maybe we'd meet some people who would give us a hard time for whatever reason, but nobody even remotely was offensive to us.
Right. What do you think the fear was about, and how were, yeah. What did you think? Why did you kind of approach it with that fear?
Well, I think it's, I mean, as much as I'm, you know, ashamed to admit it, it's just a fear of from you get from watching TV maybe and watching movies.
Yeah.
Going into the unknown, and supposedly there are bad people out there who do bad things. And if you're out there on your bike, maybe the bike is a bad example. You're out there on your own. And you could potentially run into some bad people,
right? And you can't anticipate. You can't necessarily won't necessarily be able to defend yourself.
Right?
Yeah. You're vulnerable.
Yes.
And you chose to be vulnerable, and it proved in your case to be just fine.
Yeah, I mean, what I wasn't worried about before the trip, and what I should have been worried about was the actual biking, the actual riding. You know. Uh-huh. Like, that was the hard part.
Right. In terms of the muscle strain or the blisters or the...
It was... I had this feeling throughout it that it's actually, you know, like, an endeavor like that is probably 70% mental. Because, I mean, you can force yourself to do it, but to make your muscles continue to work.
Right.
But you have to really mentally, you know, because, you know, there were 4 or 5 days where you're just riding into a headwind. For 8 or 9 hours a day, just going very, very slow, just tedious, you know, boring. And you're like, why am I doing this? Mm-hmm. You know, so you have to kind of just make yourself do it if you want to. Of course, you have to find the desire to do it.
Or you can just say, "I am doing this."
Yeah. Yes.
You said, what did you in that vulnerability and in that it's not a lack of purpose, but it's kind of a repetitive purpose that gets boring. How did you find yourself?
I had this mantra maybe that I was going over in my head, and it's one that I've heard a lot from my dad, and it's basically everything is temporary. So when I would get into these doldrums on the road, and I would feel like, this is stupid. Why am I doing this? I'm in so much pain. This is so boring or whatever.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Or maybe thinking about, or because I had so much time out there, sort of dwelling on aspects of my life. You know, I'd just finished college, and I was basically moving out to the East Coast to be with my girlfriend at the time. So I had a lot of, you know, sort of emotional things going on too. So when I'd have this physical challenge to overcome, it was easy to focus on that. And when that physical challenge got so hard that I couldn't focus on it, this idea of that pain and that suffering being temporary really helped, you know, mm-hmm. because you can say, okay, I'm going to make it as far as that stop sign or make it as far as the horizon, or I'm just going to bike for another hour and take a break. And you do whatever, you do those little things and they would help you get to the next benchmark mm-hmm. And the next one before you know it. Maybe the wind stops or you have a long downhill or you run into somebody who you saw 2 days ago and you have this great conversation with them and you sort of forget all about the pain, you know? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Did something change inside of you as you kept going back to this is temporary, this is, you know, transient? Did something change in your understanding of yourself?
If I understand the question correctly, yeah. It kind of makes you, when you tell yourself that and then you actually see it happening
right.
and feel it happening.
Right, because you can tell yourself that till you're blue in the face, but until you actually it hits you in the face that you're experiencing it.
Yeah, and then the sort of hard part ends and the fun begins, but you have to still tell yourself, this also is temporary.
Right.
So as much as I'm enjoying this now, there's going to be a day where it's going to rain or I'm going to get a flat tire or whatever, but I'll just deal with that then. And then that also will be temporary and we'll just move on from there. And so I think that I was able to react to challenges in a much more calm way mm-hmm, mm-hmm. and I wouldn't panic when something happened. But the guy I was riding with, I could compare myself to him and the fact that he was, you know, he would panic anytime something unexpected happened.
Right.
And he would get really, really upset if he got a flat tire or if he had some other mechanical problem mm-hmm. or if the weather didn't cooperate. And he was actually a much better cyclist than I was. Uh-huh. He was much faster, much stronger. And I had a hard time keeping up with him physically.
Right.
But... and I'm not saying this as a value judgment at all, but his sort of mental game was not quite as strong
right,
for whatever reason, right, you know.
Right. And the way you took my question is you also opened up the idea that, you know, you don't get attached to reacting negatively to the bad stuff,
yeah.
but you don't overly cling to the positive.
Yes, that's the goal,
yeah.
you know, because it's a life pursuit. It's not like, okay, I understand that now after this trip, I got it. You have to continually
right.
work on that,
right,
you know.
Right, right. But it seems like this trip posed it to you in a way that you can go back and continue to practice
yes.
at it. With some, I mean, when I learned how to meditate when I was about 20, I guess the summer I turned 21 or thereabouts, that's set a body memory in me so that when I straighten my spine, and you can see me almost begin to yawn, when I straighten my spine and pull my body into that position, I am automatically going into that space. But I have to remember to do that in order to take care of myself. And if I don't remember to do that, then it's not very much fun.
Right.
The stress will get me or the anxiety will get me.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what did you discover that you value or that you about yourself that you maybe didn't know have the perspective on as you were going through these this bicycle trip?
Well, I think big picture wise, I was really surprised that I was able to complete the trip.
Uh-huh.
I think there was a part of me before I set out that said like I don't know if I'm really gonna make it the whole way. Like it's a big endeavor, you know.
Yeah.
And so,
and you weren't judging yourself about that. You were just observing that. I don't know if I can make it the whole way.
Yeah. And, you know, I at the time when I was in school in Arizona, I was in a community with a lot of sort of adventurous people.
Right.
Who were into outdoor pursuits and
extreme stuff.
Yes. Well, extreme and
physically extreme, I mean.
Yes. Yeah. And, but I wasn't involved in that community very much. I was sort of on the periphery of that kind of thing.
Right.
And I sort of saw myself as maybe not like of them and not able to do some of those things. Mm-hmm. And so when I was planning the trip and then left for the trip and then, you know, at the end of it, I said, well, I can't believe that I did that. You know, like just out of thin air, you know, I sat down and I planned this trip out, and I got someone to come with me. He wasn't really involved in the planning. I just right. needed someone to come with me, sort of as like partner. A traveling companion.
Yeah.
And it went fine. I mean, it went better than fine. It was an amazing, you know, experience.
Yeah, that's neat. That's
and
neat.
So I, at the time, you know, I developed a lot of self-confidence from it. But then I was sort of at the bottom of the barrel in New York City trying to make things happen. And what I learned on the trip was it was hard to apply it to my life in the city mm-hmm. because it was so completely different.
Right.
But I think in the long run, I was able to figure out what those lessons I learned were, what the how important they were, and how I could continue to... how I could continue to use those lessons to be a better person or to just live
right, yeah, successfully. Just draw on that skill, knowing how to hold yourself kind of, I want to use the word accountable, but to go back to that skill and apply it.
Yeah, just remember what you've learned
yeah.
and know that, and remember what's possible, yeah. you know.
Let's cut to music. What would you sure. like to play next?
Let me see. Let's look at the list real here. Let's do this Michael Hurley track, The Hog of the Forsaken.
Okie doke. And do you want to say anything about it?
It's really well known as the theme song to the show Deadwood, but I just know it as a Michael Hurley song. Big fan of him.
Okay.
And yeah, he's great.
The forsaken got no reason to cry. He got to chew the angels falling from on high. He ain't waiting for no answer, begging woeful pie. Pie of eyesight, pie blue black. Oh, that pie, the pie of by and by. The forsaken, well, he ain't like you and I, with bones always breaking and no place to go lie. He's in the box so dark and wet, he got so much time, he ain't even worried yet. The hog of the forsaken, he is the pork of crime. Forsaken, he'll leave you one more chance, which if you won't be taken, he'll leave it for the ants. He sings out in the wilderness, he sings for friend and foe, he sings of these and those times as well as the times to go. The forsaken, he swims out into the sea, behind the alligator guard, chased a leaping mullet. He chops water a hyacinth, going to the sea. The hog of the forsaken, he is the hog for me. He chops the water a hyacinth, going to the sea. Hog of the forsaken, he is the hog for me. That's
You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca. This is the Made of Clay Report, and our guest on this hour is John Ziegler. So, John, continue with your story. Tell us about, you know, the struggle in New York City and the move beyond, and how you have kind of applied or learned or struggled with some of those lessons from the bicycle trip.
Oh, let's see. Well, you know, I lived in New York for maybe 2 or 3 years mm-hmm. once after I arrived there, and never really found good work. Was kind of just hustling around, working in some stores, moving furniture, doing kind of...
This was after the writing gig?
Yes.
Yeah. So how long did the writing gig last?
Not terribly long, but I did some freelance work.
Sure.
For these different magazines and online magazines, mostly writing about music.
Uh-huh.
Because I've always been a big listener and appreciator and talker about music.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I wrote on and off for some different places. And in the meantime, like I said, had a bunch of different odd jobs, you know, working on people's houses a little bit. And I had a friend who would get these contracts to kind of build out storefronts for this one particular store that he used to work for. So I would help him do that. And, but I didn't feel like I really had a place there.
You're biding time.
Yeah, I kind of felt that way, trying to figure out what to do next. Mm-hmm. And I met my wife there, and she decided she wanted to... She was kind of in a similar place,
right?
Like use that term, biding time. It mm-hmm. kind of felt the same way. And so she wanted to study herbal medicine, and lo and behold, there's the school out in Ithaca, New York. And I was somewhat familiar with Ithaca because I had two really good friends who left Brooklyn a few years before I did to move out here mm-hmm. to start farming. And so I'd actually visited them. So I had a little bit of reference for what it was. In my mind, it was just kind of a college town.
Mm-hmm.
And so I took a little convincing to get out here because it felt like a big change and kind of a big step. Because my wife and I, we weren't married at the time. We'd been together for maybe 2 years or so.
Mm-hmm.
So it felt like a big move. And I had moved out to New York City to be with someone, and it didn't work out.
Right.
And I had felt kind of spurned, you know? So I was feeling a little insecure about it.
Right.
But she convinced me. Yeah. So.
You're reminding me of a Jim Croce song, New York's Not My Home. It's one of his lesser known songs, but it's uh-huh. a really beautiful ballad.
Okay. Yeah. I'll check it out.
Yeah.
Maybe we have it here in the stacks.
Possibly. No, I had my own New York City story. I went down there after college and didn't have anything else in mind particular to do. And it took me 2 years to relax because it was so much activity.
Yeah.
So you kind of had to be aware of what was happening. And it was a lot rougher city back in the early 80s in terms
sure.
of violence and just general dirt. And I worked construction. Eventually found a niche and went to seminary, but it was never my home.
Right.
Yeah.
I got comfortable there eventually,
mm-hmm.
but, and then I miss a lot of things about it.
Yep.
But when Trina, my wife and I go back to visit, I don't feel like I should be back there.
You don't miss living there.
No, it doesn't feel like, oh, this is where I need to be,
Yeah.
But it's an amazing place. I'm not a anti-New York person by any means.
No.
You know?
Yeah, I love aspects of life, and not having to live there makes it even more possible to enjoy.
Yeah.
Them.
Yeah. So,
how has your relationship changed in the move up here? What was possible by coming to Ithaca that wasn't possible, or how have you changed by getting out of New York City?
My relationship with
your partner and
my
also
wife,
with
my
your
now
wife, and also with yourself.
Well, I mean, you certainly have a lot more literal space
mm-hmm.
than being in the city, and that allows for, you know, metaphorical space as well. Like, you have the time to reflect, you have the time to do things that you want to do rather than things that you have to do. You know, you still end up struggling at times to make ends meet. here as you would in New York City,
right.
But the situation is far less dire, and the pace of life is a lot slower, even though both Shereen and I are very, very busy all the time, and we have a lot of things that we do. It's not the same kind of busy as living in a city.
Right. And in the city, the busy is all around you, and you just kind of flow into the stream of busyness.
Yes.
And here you're busy, but it's not necessarily everyone around you is not as busy necessarily.
Most people seem to be not that busy. It seems that way, you know.
Yeah.
Or they're busy with things like, you know, their families.
Right. Right.
And
they're occupied, but they're not.
Yes.
It's not busyness.
Right. So I think, you know, moving out of the city also allowed us to, live in a house together and sort of create a home. And, you know, we didn't buy a house, but we rented, and it felt like we were together more in that sense because we could create our own home together. We didn't have to have a roommate or three roommates.
Right.
You know, it felt like our real space. And so we got to know each other in that sense. And we were able to do things that we wanted to do. Like I said, like I found a job working for a home builder, which was something I wanted to do more of. You know, I thought I had experience doing that, but once I started doing it full time, I realized that I was a novice.
Right.
And so I was able to, you know, and when you start a job like that, you don't get paid very much.
Right.
But I was able to pay rent and buy food and buy gas, no problem, you know, and do all that. And I could start at the bottom without worrying about, you know, whether I could get by or not.
Right.
Like
right.
In a big place like New York, you have to start at the bottom, either with an unpaid internship or what have you. And it's really hard if you don't have any money already
right.
to
and
do that.
Even having your tools safe in cars
yep.
around the street. I had a whole bunch of tools stolen out of the back of my car.
Yeah, just
and
basic
you just
stuff.
Can't protect stuff. Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's less likely to be an issue here.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just way easier to deal with things like that. And I think in jumping into this job, it was a little scary, you know, like starting a new job always, but also going full time into this trade and then having to realize I didn't have as much experience as I thought and kind of having to swallow my pride and realize I'm starting from the very bottom and that's that, you know, and working my way up. I'm still with the same company and things are going great and I've learned a ton, you know, but I probably wouldn't have had the confidence or to do that, you know, without something like the bicycle trip or moving to, you know, putting myself in these challenging situations.
Right. Where you
and I had experience doing that. So I said, okay, well, I'm going to take this job and it's going to be hard and I'm going to be uncomfortable and maybe, you know, but I've done this before, you know.
And it doesn't help me to be ashamed of my ignorance. It just is what it is. And I need to learn.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And what you've described is resilience.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And kind of developing that. And a lot of us, you know, we may have had it early, but until we claim that we can get through this.
Yes.
Or we don't know how we're going to get through this, but we're going to muddle our way through.
I mean, I agree with you, but I always feel like the term resilience, I think of it more as someone who's been through a trauma, you know, so I always feel like I shouldn't describe myself as with a word like resilience, because they're challenging situations, but it's just, they're just kind of mundane things like starting a new job, moving to a new town, but they are challenging.
I don't know how many people who are faint of heart, for whom those small challenges become the occasion or the excuse for not overcoming.
Yeah.
So I resilience comes in many forms, and may you not be hit with the big trauma, but if you are, you've had some practice. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that I think is, and I highlight it just because for listeners, because I do talk with people who've been through major traumas, but when we talk about the smaller stuff in ways that recognizes the skills, I think that's important. And I think, it is, for some people who are not, who have a hard time with humility, starting at the bottom is almost a deal breaker. Especially when they felt like they weren't at the bottom. that kind of feedback is almost impossible to take for some people. And it's a respect for your clarity about that, but also realizing it wasn't a major life trauma.
Right. I guess you know what I'm saying.
So what kind of a community have you found here in Ithaca, and how has that shaped your life with your partner, with your wife? Yeah.
Well, funny you should ask. We are kind of struggling with the community aspect at the moment.
Uh-huh. I mean,
I hesitate to use the word struggle because it's not really a struggle. It's more of, well, basically, we've had a lot of really close friends move away in the last 2 years. Yep. I would say maybe 4 or 5 couples, so, you know, 10 people or so, 8 to 10 people, and a few individuals, people who really formed our core group of friends.
And you've been here for
almost six years, I think.
Yeah. That's a big shock.
Well, yeah, I mean, I can think back on birthday celebrations or parties or whatever we've had where only those people were at the house.
Right.
Where only those 2 or 3 couples and a handful of individuals. Mm-hmm. And they've all moved away and don't have any plans on moving back. They all wanted to settle down, or they wanted to be closer to something else, and they found different places all over the country.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a little bit, it makes you a little sad or makes you miss them. Uh-huh. But, you know, we still have other friends and we're still busy.
Right.
But as far as, there was a time when we felt we had a really good core group of people.
Right.
But even then, most of those people were always talking about where to live next.
Right. They weren't here.
And so were we. It was part of part of the identity of the community was like, where are we all going to move, you know?
This was a temporary way station, and we were getting ready to go someplace else.
Right. And Shereen and I are still here.
Yeah. And are you getting ready to go someplace else?
Well, we don't have any plans to go anywhere. No.
It sounds like what you describe is kind of a longing.
For us or for people?
To have people in a way that you had them that aren't necessarily going to be leaving.
Yes. Yeah. Feeling like you have you can invest in a relationship with somebody. It's a little bit harder when someone says, when you meet someone and they're really cool or you really hit it off with them and you like them, but they always say, oh, this is such a drab place. We don't want to live here. We got to go somewhere else.
Yeah. Too many days without sunshine.
Well, yeah. I agree. But
yeah, but they said that we got to get out of here. We're not committed here.
Yeah.
And you guys are committed. You got married, didn't you?
Yeah, we got married here, and we have family, you know, a few hours from here. Mm-hmm. Nobody right in town, but East Coast and, you know, Western New York. But I think what that's done for Shereen and I is, you know, obviously she and I are still here.
Right.
And we're still together.
Right.
So we know we can depend on each other.
Right.
So in some ways it's kind of made us closer because we have our external relationships, you know, with our friends, and some of them are kind of fleeting because obviously they move away. But we know that we're together.
Mm-hmm.
And so it helps our relationship get stronger.
You also have a relationship here with the radio station.
That's true.
And how did that happen? And what is it?
Well, if you remember Eric Martinez.
Oh, yes.
I know he was a guest on your show.
Yep.
Some time ago. He was a friend of mine. He falls into the category of really close friends
who moved away.
Hightailed it after a short time. He's from New Orleans too. He and I didn't know each other at all in the city, never met. We met through a mutual friend in Ithaca, and then he ended up moving up here. And we lived in the same house, and he and I became very close. I mean, he just makes great friends with almost everyone he meets. He's just that kind of person.
He's a gracious and gregarious.
Yes, and very generous and just very sweet. A genuinely big-hearted person.
Yep.
You know.
Yep.
So he and I became friends. And I found out he was doing this radio show, and he said, oh, you should come by, be on the radio. And then I'm like, wow, he must really think that I'm something really special if he wants me to be on this radio show with him. And then I go in, and there's 5 other people in, and then the next night there's, you know, 2 other people, and, you know, My point being,
he has a community on the radio show.
Yes. And he had just moved here like 3 months before. He knows more people than I do. He knows all the bartenders by their first names, and they know him. He's got a show on the radio. And so he kind of inspired me to break out of my, you know, because I hang out with the same four or five guys at work for the past 6 years. And then I have a few other friends. And then he inspired me to sort of, you know, there's a lot more going on in Ithaca than going to work and going home and whoever will come over to your house to drink beers, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So I started coming in, sitting in with him in the studio, and I really loved it. You know, like I said, I'm a big music fan, record collector, and I'm like, this is really cool. I really like this. And I basically took over his show when he moved away. So the show is called The Humming Wires. It's on Monday nights at 9. And he left, and now I do it solo, and I occasionally have a guest or two, and we talk about whatever and spin records and hang out.
And you play all vinyl?
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, I play stuff off the iPhone or CDs once in a while.
Yeah.
If there's something I really want to play, but I don't have it. You know, like I did a Mardi Gras show a few weeks ago, and I don't really have a lot of the classic Mardi Gras songs on record.
Right.
So I had to go to the YouTube for that. Yeah. But
and is there a theme to your show? It's just what you like? And
well,
what does Humming Wires mean?
Well, I think I might be the fifth host under that title.
Yeah, yeah.
So whoever started the show way back when, they created the title.
Uh-huh.
So it's up for interpretation, obviously. Yeah, I don't know what it means.
Interesting. Yeah.
I mean, your guess is as good as mine.
Yeah. Yeah. I think of the sound that the wires would make with the when the wind passes through them in the rural America.
Yeah.
And you can sometimes hear this very slight hum in a high wind.
Sure.
But that's what I associate it with.
Well, that's just a great image. Yeah, I like that. Yeah, I'm good for that. But there's not a big theme because I'm picking things out of my own collection. It's kind of just like, oh, I'd like to hear that song, and that reminds me of this song, and oh, that kind of reminds. But I don't plan out a playlist.
Mm-hmm,
just sort of flip through my records 5 minutes before I need to leave, and grab 20 or 30 of them, and rush down here and jump on the air, and I guess I'll play this now.
Yep.
But
and that
I kind of like the free or the lack of form, you know. Yeah. Right.
And that is community radio. Is being able to for people who love music to play and share the music they love with others, and to listen to each other's music, without a lot of interruption, without any advertising, and not a lot of polish or glitz. I mean, it's pretty much you get what you.
No, there are some DJs who obviously have a lot more experience, and they're much better at sort of reading public service announcements and working those seamlessly into their show. And maybe they have recorded sections of their show, and their show has a real identity, and they have a real identity as a DJ. And I think that's really cool, and I kind of aspire to that. But I also like the people who are just like, oh, I guess I'll play this, and they're kind of awkward and strange. Yeah. But like you said, it's a reflective of our community. You have your show, which is unique in its style.
What matters to me is that people can be who they are in public.
Yeah.
Without having to have over polish or without having to worry too much. And I have made major mistakes, major verbal gaffes. I've been off air not realizing it.
Yeah.
You know, and this is just the way, you know, if you can live with me the way I am, I'll live with you the way you are. And hopefully we can have a good time.
Yeah, absolutely.
What should we play next?
Okay, let's see.
We have time for two more songs before we close her out today.
Let's go with the first one on our list here, the Plugs, Real 10.
Okie doke. Anything you want to say about that one?
This is just a really great song, instrumental, kind of a surf rock thing that was on the soundtrack to the movie Repo Man. And the band, the Plugs, are a rare, they were like one of the first Chicano punk bands in LA, so they're kind of famous for setting that mark. They put out two records in the early 80s. They're really awesome. Good. If you can find them, pick them up.
You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report, and our guest on this hour is John Ziegler. So, John, the way we kind of wind the show down is to reflect on the question, what is it that you do to take care of yourself intellectually, emotionally, and physically? How do you know you need to do it? How, you know, when are things kind of not going well? And how have you, you know, how have you learned to do that?
Well, I definitely have some things that fall into that category that I do. I mean, they're not very interesting. I mean, but basically,
they're what you do, so they may be not too interesting to you, but we don't talk about this stuff generally in public.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, you know, exercising really helps.
Mm-hmm. You exercise above and beyond the construction work you do.
Yeah, I don't really think of that as exercise.
Right.
I mean, it is.
It's physical, but it's not.
You're lifting heavy stuff. You're on your feet constantly. You're climbing up and down ladders.
But
so
it's not
it is very physical.
But it's not constant in the way that an exercise workout is.
Well, for me, the exercise is, there's the physical aspect of it.
Mm-hmm.
But I really like to run. And I really like to bike and swim. Last summer, I got really into swimming in the lake. And so it was more about, obviously, the physical side is very important,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
but kind of like what I was talking about with the bike trip, it's also a mental exercise. You just feel very at peace with things after, you know, a good endorphin rush, I guess, is chemically what's going on.
Right.
But, you know, I'll go for, I might feel very tired and very cranky, and but if I force myself to go, you know, after work or whatever,
sure,
if I force myself to go out for a jog for half an hour, 45 minutes, I come back and I'm physically very tired and maybe my knees hurt a little bit, but mentally I feel great. I'm so happy that I did that.
Right.
And I'm actually feel energized from it. And the same is true in the summer, you know, from being in the lake, being in that cold, cold water.
Especially early in the summer.
Yeah. And in certain parts of the lake, you can find places to swim where there's no one there.
Right.
And so you're out there in the dark water swimming around by yourself. And it's a really amazing experience. And biking too, because, you know, you can get out on the bike and go really, really far, you know, out here, because there's a lot of
open roads.
The roads are set up in a way that you can easily get out, and there's some roads that don't have a lot of traffic on them, and you can just sort of take off. And so that kind of exercising, sort of spending that time alone to sort of physically exhaust yourself and also work out some things in my head, really, really helps me sort of get back to top dead center, you might say.
Right. No, and what you've described is why, you know, the physical labor may actually have some of those same impacts on your body.
Oh, sure.
It's not being able, you can't dedicate yourself because you're working. And
yeah.
And when you do it intentionally as exercise with the bike or the swimming or the running, you really are able to pull into yourself and not have to worry about building anything.
Yes. Yeah. I agree.
You just have to be safe on the road.
Right. And it's all muscle memory, you know, because I started running when I was 11 or 12. And so I can go out there and run. And there are definitely days where, for whatever reason, it might be really painful. But there are also times when I'm not even feeling anything that I'm doing. I'm just sort of going, you know, get into this sort of flow state.
Right.
And that's a really great place to be.
Yeah, it's by making those connections. When I was 11 or 12, I was carrying groceries to people's homes in this very small town where I worked in the grocery store. And I was too young to drive, and we didn't think about having, you know, baskets on bikes. So I just put them in my arms, and I would speed walk. I would get very quick at, you know, delivering groceries, and it does create a muscle memory. And to this day, I really prefer to speed walk to run than running, because it's just not as hard on my knees.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
and working on an elliptical too.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I mean, whatever it is that people like to do.
And what do you do for your kind of your I mean, you described that many of your friends and the kind of those emotional anchors have kind of moved away. What do you do to kind of address that emotional piece of your life and restoring that? I know that the endorphin rush gives you a calm and a peacefulness, but the exploring of kind of emotional things or the what do you do, or do you do anything specifically for that side of your life?
You know, I don't know if I have a practice that either directly or indirectly addresses
saying.
I've thought about that a lot.
Because
I know that there's a lot of evidence pointing to things like meditation, or meditation in particular.
Right.
That can be very, very beneficial. It seems like, oh, you just sit there and, you know, hum or whatever. That's like the sort of popular derogatory perspective on it, right?
Right.
But I know that there's a lot of science now examining that shows that there are a lot of health benefits from doing it.
Right. But it has the same impact on the brain that you're running or swimming or biking does. So it could be kind of redundant. And when you come out of a meditation, especially where it's an emptiness meditation and you've stripped away all the thoughts and stuff, then everything that hits you with more clarity and more power. Uh-huh. It's like, whoa, I never knew I felt that way about that, because it's coming at me now without any other stuff blocking the impact.
Yeah. Well, it has been a goal of mine for a long time to at least give meditation
a try,
Yeah. But I always get caught up in the physical aspect of it.
Yeah.
It's painful for me to sit in one place.
Yeah, yeah.
For
and
that
I mean
long.
And that's why, you know, singing, running, swimming, all of these activities have the same effect without having to sit still.
Yeah.
What do you do to intellectually kind of keep your mind sharp? You know, you've been a writer, you like to write.
Yeah.
But what do you do to kind of feed that part of your...
Well, I definitely still read a lot, mm-hmm. and I try to read things that are challenging. I mean, I was sort of trained, I guess you could say, as a fiction writer,
uh-huh.
so I still read a lot of fiction, but, and you know, my job is very challenging mentally in a lot of ways,
right?
Especially sort of my aspect of it.
What is your role on the job side?
Well, I'm sort of like a big part of my job, and a certain point in the process is to take the blueprint, what's right. on the blueprint, and turn it into this portion of the house I have to lay everything out.
Yeah, you're laying out
and
the
cut
framing,
everything,
and you're cutting
and
all
give it to the other guys and say, "Here's how this whole thing goes together." So
these
I'm taking the prints yeah. and turning them into the frame. You know,
right? You're cutting the pieces and they're assembling it.
Yeah. Or like building stairs, which is a notoriously complex.
That is a very difficult. I've done it.
Yeah. So there are yeah. definitely times when I'm it's very, mentally very challenging.
Yeah. Yeah.
But when I'm outside of work, I try to read things that are mentally challenging in different fields, mm-hmm. about art history or politics, and then the fiction I read. You know, it runs the gamut, but I try to make my brain work in more ways than one.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. No, and this is a rich community in which to read, because there's
sure.
just so much stuff traveling around. You can find it on the internet, but you also have a lot of people here who have lots of different tastes.
Absolutely.
Yeah. John, it's been wonderful to get to know you.
Yeah, it's been good talking to you, Eric.
What should we close the show with?
Let's do Rock and Roll by the Velvet Underground.
Okie doke. And any commentary on it before we call it a day?
Well, I think the show is really great.
Well, thank you.
On the song?
Yeah.
I just think that what you're doing community-wise is a very good
thank
effort,
you.
And it was a lot of fun and not as scary as I thought it was going to be.
Good.
But Velvet Underground Rock and Roll, probably my favorite band of all time,
mm-hmm.
and a song that I think really encapsulates what Lou Reed really feels about music.
When she was just 5 years old, there was nothing happening at all.